You're listening to the Home Improvement Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
We got good news, bad news for you this morning at 9:05. Bad news is I'm out of coffee. The good news is Walter Assey has pulled up a chair across from me. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. How was the drive-in?
The drive-in was not bad. Wet. I should have done the show out of my bed this morning. That would have been a great,
it's always
great
an
thing
option.
To do.
It's always an option.
That's when you choose your remote correctly, my friend.
Did you come through the tunnel? Is it still down to one lane?
It's down to two lanes.
Two lanes, okay.
And there's still a cops and a lot of investigation happening
eastbound
there.
Because
that's correct. Yeah, I was worried for a second. I'm thinking, you know, maybe Jimmy is going to really panic now.
Yeah, you made it in plenty of time. 514-790-0800. If you want to talk to Walter, pick his brain. You got a problem at home, he is the guy. Call now and grab a line. We're going to start with I think we're going out to Beaconsfield. Is it Mitchie or Mishi? Is it Dave? Who's on the line? Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Who is this? Who's calling?
It's Mishi.
Nishi?
Yeah.
Oh, very nice. You're out west on the West Island. You want to talk about finishing your basement floor?
Yes.
You're on the radio with Walter. Say good morning.
Hi, good morning, Walter.
Good morning, Mishi. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Go ahead.
So part of our basement is unfinished, but we have some efflorescence showing on the slab, and we would like to finish it. To make like a home gym storage and a workshop area. It has our furnace in that area as well. And we're wondering what's the best way to put a floor in, because right now we had painted it many years ago, and with some of the chalk, some of the paint is coming up, and there is a little bit of cement being deteriorated. Little holes in areas.
Okay, so efflorescence mean that there's some humidity pushing through your cement. So that's a salt in your cement pushing through, creating that powdery substance that you see on top. So my first question would be, what is the source of that moisture so we can stop it? Okay, and okay. You know, have you looked around to see if anything is leaking? Because you said there's a furnace, maybe the drain is blocked, or?
Yes, we have had issues, and maybe that is a result from a while ago. Like, we did put a piece of plastic down for a week. There's no moisture now, but we did have the drain blocked at one point. We had water, and we had some sweating because we had changed our HVAC system about 4 years ago, and I think I noticed, because we had a lot of stuff in the basement, I didn't always see it, but there was sweating going on with the heat pump air conditioner unit.
Okay.
I guess the air handler there, and there was water around that as well, so it could be just from, I don't know, is it possible that the efflorescence is just from moisture that came a couple times and maybe
yes.
We don't have it right now?
Yes, it is. And one way to know is you clean it up and you wait a bit and you see if it comes back. If it doesn't come back, that means you can trace it down to what happened in that particular incident. Probably no proper drying was done then. There was water for a while and so on and so forth. So the good news is that you have a trace of what happened. And and that's great. We don't, you know, that's a great start. Now, let's say we clean the efflorescence and it doesn't come back. At this point, any type of flooring that is waterproof would be recommended, you know, humidity proof and what have you. Maybe some type of subflooring if you would have the height. Like if you were to do a subfloor, I would recommend a dry core system, which is in essence a 2x2 boards. They have like some plastic or channels underneath, and that plastic is obviously mold and water resistant, waterproof, I should even say. And you use plastic shims as well to shim it up to about 3/4 inch. What's great with this product, it does not take a lot of height. It's tongue and groove, so it blocks the humidity out for you. And when you have water underneath, the ridges that are underneath canalize the water towards the drain. In addition to that, you have plastic shims, so it does not get rot or it does not deteriorate if you would have any type of humidity or water that gets through. So that will act as some kind of a vapor barrier or a humidity barrier from the slab. And then right on top of that, you can really put anything. The most popular right now would be vinyl PVC flooring.
Okay.
Because it's waterproof, because it looks nice, easy to maintain, and easy to install, and it's reusable in case, you know, you need to unclick it and reclick it again, you could.
Okay.
You know, there's different qualities. Obviously, you have the good, the bad, and the ugly, like in everything. But as a product, it works. And it works a lot more than, you know, laminate flooring that we used to put. Because laminate flooring, you drop a glass of water, it swells up and it changes.
Yeah.
Whereas this one is made... it's made to be very resistant to anything that is humidity, water, or even scratches and what have you.
Yes, because part of it will be for weights, so it's going to be quite heavy. So the vinyl flooring is durable enough for that.
It's the most durable that I would know. Obviously, if you go with the better quality ones, because there are some that are not really great. But if you go with the better quality ones, they are very durable and they're made to be shock resistant.
Okay.
I think they have about 30 years guarantee from the manufacturer, usually, the good ones.
Okay, that sounds great. Yeah, because we still do have moisture. It's an old house, so I think we don't have a membrane under our slab like they do nowadays. So we will always have a bit of... not water sitting in there, but there is always, I think, a bit of hydrostatic pressure.
Yes, and that's a great observation. Usually, it's many things. Number one, a lot of those slabs were not done to be 5 inches like the slabs of today. You don't have geotextile underneath, and you're right. Just natural humidity of the earth comes out in the basement and creates that nasty smell. So doing a subfloor becomes imperative in this case.
Okay. Thank you very much. So you definitely recommend the dry core system.
Any type of subflooring system. What I like about the dry core is the thing that I explained for you. But any type of subflooring system would help cut the humidity from the slab, for sure.
Very good.
Thanks, Mishi.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Have a good day. Bye.
That opens up a line at 514-790-0800. You know what we're going to do? We're going to bring Noreen in because she's next in line. She'll ask her question, then we're going to take a little break for traffic, all right? So we'll just kind of reset, all right, with Walter Assey from Renovco. Home Improvement Show. I'm Ken Connors. Jimmy's behind the board handling all the buttons. Noreen, you're out in DDO, right?
That's right. Good morning.
Good morning to you. Let's set up your situation, and then we'll take a little break and come back. So is it about the cold room?
Yes, it is, and I should give you some background. If it starts taking too long and you need to do the commercial, just let me know.
Okay.
And we'll finish after.
Yeah, just give me the nutshell version of the situation here.
Right. Okay. The problem is water in the cold room.
Yeah.
Our home is now 54 years old. It's basically a good, solid house. The basement tends to be a little more humid than the rest of the house. We have an 8-foot by 9-foot 8 foot long by 9 foot wide cement slab front porch that also acts as the roof of a basement cold room. The walls and the floor of the cold room are also cement.
Mm.
The base, excuse me. And at certain times of the year, the cold room is more humid than others. And sometimes we even at one point had a musty smell. So on Yannick's recommendation about 15 years ago, we put intake and outtake pipes through what used to be a single vent and installed a computer fan in the exit pipe, and that solved that problem.
Okay.
But 2 years ago, I noticed water dripping from the ceiling and about 6 to 10 inches down the two sides of the cold room that face the outside. Two of the sides butt up against either the house or the garage.
Okay.
And they were okay, but the other two. It eventually got worse, so small chunks of cement started coming off the ceiling.
Oh, boy.
And exposing part of the a piece of rebar that rusted.
Okay.
And
all right, you've got issues with that cold room.
Right.
All right, I'm going to put you on hold, Noreen. We're going to come right back, and Walter will address that situation. But in the meantime, at 9:15,
you might just need to tighten a thingamajig on the whatchamacallit. This is the Home Improvement Show on CJAD 800.
920-514-790-0800 is the number to call to talk live on the air and pick his brain. Walter Assey from Inovco is here. Did you have time during the news break, commercial break, to digest Noreen's story about the cold room?
I have a lot of questions.
Uh-oh.
It's something that you hear about often.
Okay.
Cold rooms is not a great thing in a home if it's part of an exterior structure. I don't think it's a great idea. You don't see much of it in newer homes.
Okay, Noreen's still on the line, by the way.
Oh, good.
Okay.
So, Noreen, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So you were explaining for us a bit of the history, and I think the corrective measures you took were more geared towards the condensation inside and the humidity inside the cold room, and now we're suffering from water infiltration. Am I correct?
Well, we're not sure. Our first thought was condensation, except that it tends to happen mainly when the temperature is within a few degrees of zero and particularly humid outside. We also called masons because we thought someone told us that cement, the mason told us we still had a good solid slab, but that the cement tends to get more porous with age.
Correct.
And we couldn't find a mason who wanted to deal with it. There were no visible cracks, but we called Acton Injection anyway because we weren't sure where to turn and what the problem was. They recommended somebody who dug down about 18 inches on the two outside walls of the porch/cold room, and then they put epoxy where the porch slab meets the walls of the cold room in case there were any hairline cracks there, and a polymer base coat, a flexible cementitious polymer membrane, and then two polymer texture coats, and then two coats of acrylic solvent sealer on the upper sides and the top sides of the porch and wall of the cold room, and that seemed to solve the problem. And they also repaired the cement on the inside of the cold room. But then as soon as the temperature got close to zero again, I saw droplets of water on the ceiling of the cold room on the two coldest sides, the two sides that are not against the garage or the house. It's not as bad as before, but then it's had all summer to dry out, and we don't know whether it's going to get worse. So we're not sure what to do now.
Okay. So what Acton did was mostly for the connectivity between the walls and the slab. And that
Acton didn't do it. They recommended someone else.
Okay.
We checked out their references.
Okay.
And
that's a common thing. That's a common thing that the connectivity is not right. And then you have that gap, and that's fine. I'm just going to go through a set of things just to go by elimination process, because when it comes to water infiltration versus condensation, sometimes it's very tricky and there's a very fine line between the two. You said that it happens when the temperature is close to freezing. Am I correct?
That's right.
Okay. So,
within about 5 degrees of zero.
Okay, does it happen when the conditions outside are wet? Like, do we have lots of rain or
humidity, yeah.
Yeah. No, just this is a big difference. Do I have rain or do I have humidity?
I think both.
Both.
But definitely when there's rain.
Okay, because if there's rain and then there's water, then we can say there is a porosity problem, and then we have to... And we have to look at it in that sense. If we say it's a humidity issue and just the right conditions to create condensation, that's a totally different approach for repair.
Yeah, it's hard to tell because it takes time for the moisture to come through.
Okay, so what you need to do is some type of a log of conditions, meaning when it leaks inside, just see in the last couple of days, within the last 48 hours, what happened. Do we have a big rainfall? Did we have what conditions? Was it sunny for a week? That will help a lot. It will save you a lot of money in the process, because at this point it goes by elimination, trial and error, right? So they look at things typically, and then they start giving recommendations accordingly. If it is From the outside, what could be done, the fast fixes for you or trials to see if that works. And in certain cases, stopping the water is too costly or impossible. So sometimes you can't stop the water, but you can change its direction. Okay. So that slab above, you look at it and you see the water puddling on it. So is it a slope towards the outside? Do we have enough slope? Sometimes with time, the slab works, and then you have those like craters in the slab, and that's where it accumulates water. And then
we don't get any puddles on the porch, and the ground slopes slightly downward from it.
Okay, so that's good. That's very good. Now, from the condensation issue, the size of cold room, you said it's 8x9.
That's right.
Okay. When you installed those ventilation pipes that you were talking about, you have from opposite areas, you installed those ventilation grills, am I correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Are they diagonal or they're facing each other?
They're diagonal.
What's the diameter?
Sorry, what do you mean? What's facing each other? I'm not sure what you mean.
Meaning you have two different holes coming from one from the right side of the wall and the other one from the left. Am I correct? Now, are they...
No, I mean, we used to have a 5-inch vent. We used that same hole through the concrete. Phil put in a couple of 2-inch pipes, but put them so that one inside the cold room, one collects from one end of the wall and one collects from the other end, and one is at the bottom and one is at the top.
One is at the bottom and one is at the top. I don't see how the one at the bottom is going to help you. You're under, aren't you under under grade at that point?
Well, the whole cold room is under grade.
Okay, so where are these holes taking the water on?
The vent is near the top of the cold room.
Okay.
And but the pipes go through the vent, and one has a fan in it. The air.
Okay.
And they come out, one extends sideways and one extends, I think this is right, I'm not looking at it right now.
Okay.
But basically they're not both, you know, bringing air in and collecting air within a foot of each other kind of thing.
Okay.
They're one is bringing in from one area and we've got a, you know, about 8 feet distance between where the other one opens inside the room.
Okay. So what would need to, obviously it's something that we have to see with our own eyes to determine, but what needs to happen is to see if you have adequate ventilation for the size of the cold room. Some cold rooms are bigger than others, and what we're kind of drawing in is not sometimes sufficient, and that could be part of the problem. The other thing that might, you know, be worth to look at would be, again, when you're logging this, is you're going to see, is there any water coming from the sidewalls as well? Because that could be a membraning issue with the foundation, dragging in the water, making all these things. So
The sidewalls don't feel wet, except before we did this last thing, that we had the work that I just told you about done. Which was done this summer, we would have it wet down the sides for between 8 and 12 inches, so 6 and 12 inches.
Yeah.
We don't see that anymore. It's just from the top.
Noreen, we're going to have to wrap up soon because we're heading into news. Walter, you just want to close up this?
Noreen, the best thing to do is really to send someone there and to kind of take a look at it live. There's so many moving parts that I could talk about. I don't want to kind of confuse you. And plus, it's more a visual thing over there. It's going to be hard. But like I said, we're going to have to look at the amount of ventilation that you have. We're going to have to look at the membraning, the slopage, and then we can maybe put a plan together of what to do.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Noreen. Listen, Jill, Dave, Diane, we're coming to you right after the news here on CJAD 800.
Whether you're handy or all thumbs, you're listening to the Home Improvement Show on CJAD 800.
9:36, let's get right to it here at 514-790-0800. Walter Assey and Ken Connors on the Home Improvement Show. Dave, is that you?
Good morning, Walter and company.
Yes.
I want to thank you so very much, Walter. I can see you listening to the calls, Noreen in particular. You're visualizing. I probably see you drawing diagrams, and your attempt to appreciate is welcomed.
Talked about your plumbing issue.
Indeed, a plumbing venting issue. I live in a bungalow. My washer is in the basement. I hear gurgling through my bathtub and whatnot when it drains, and the water level in my toilet bowl on my upstairs level seems to drop a little bit. Do I need to crawl up on the roof to look for squirrels' nests, or what's wrong with my plumbing vents?
You're asking. Okay, so the good news is you are kind of targeting it down to a plumbing vent issue, which is exactly what it is. When you hear gurgling noises, usually, or you have some type of a smell, like a sewer smell in the house, that is indicative of a plumbing vent problem. Now, it's too early in the season to say it's frost and snow that have blocked it, because we don't have any right now. So it's a very good chance that you have those nests up there, maybe a bird's nest or something, and it will be imperative that gets checked out as fast as possible. You know, it's easy now to do. It's going to be
coming. Sounds like I'm headed up under my roof.
Sorry?
Sounds like I'm headed to the roof.
Well, I mean, if you're able to go up to your roof and you're very good at it, I would. But if you're not, then I would very, you know, it depends how steep your roof is.
Yeah, you know, you be careful.
Maybe getting a professional up there is...
And I'm 70.
Oh, no. Then 100%, I would kind of evade that. Look, especially not in wet conditions. Like today, even roofers with the right kind of shoes, because I have seen homeowners on multiple occasions attempt going into roof for different things. Now, what most people don't know is that construction safety boots have different features, including the grip on your shingles. Okay, so going up there with your sneakers, even if you're agile and good,
no,
not a great thing to do. You have to have the adequate shoes.
My next door neighbor lost his dad in a fall off the roof, so I'm not tempted to get up there.
Yeah.
I would have even hired, now
it's a great time to call in roofers. They have, their season is closed.
Yeah.
These guys are so used to being up there. It's just natural for them. And they won't charge you much. I mean, it's just a question of checking out the roofing vent, making sure it's well connected, and cleaning it up, and maybe possibly caulk it around if you see any caulking or maintenance issues to do.
The roof is new, Walter. I'm really concerned about, you know, the washer as it drains, gurgles in my bathroom.
Yes, yes.
You know, so what?
But here's the thing. The reason I'm saying that is sometimes when they're changing roofs, and I've seen cases where plumbing vents during the process of changing the roof gets dislodged.
Okay.
And you know, it's just a question of connecting it back and what have you, right? I've seen it in brand new construction gets dislodged in certain cases between the plumber and the roofer and the work and what have you, things get moved. But there's a very good possibility, like you said, it's just a blocked, a bird nest up there or something, and it's a quick fix. Having said that, I would Google, I'm not going to endorse any products, but there are newer vents that are made for our weather, like vent covers, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
I would Google some, and then maybe if that's becoming a chronic problem for you that you have to pay a roofer every now and then to unblock your stacks, then you might look into installing these type of plumbing vents.
Walter, I guess the bottom line is, so I hear gurgling in my bathtub drain on the main floor when my washer empties. I'm going, so what? Is it a big problem, or is it going to be a bigger problem?
The bottom line is, usually it's not a big problem if it's plumbing vent issue, blockage issue. It's just a question of keeping it nice and clear. Mm-hmm. So I don't see it as a big problem, and hopefully it will just be a simple cleaning of your plumbing vents.
How's that, Dave?
Perfect.
All right. Thanks for the call. Good luck with it.
Yeah.
Bye now. Off to Il Bazar. Jill, you want to talk to Walter about your smoke detector?
Yes. Good morning, good. Ashley. It's Joan. Good.
Joan. Hi, Joan.
Yeah.
Hi.
I live in a rented apartment. I've been in it for 10 years. Mm-hmm. We've had to replace the smoke detector. It was beeping. Mm-hmm. The handyman came in, replaced it with a new one. However, the beeping continues, and this has been going on for days. It's not the piercing one, like if you have smoke, it's a beep, 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 and it goes on for 30 beeps twice a day, always at 1 o'clock in the morning,
no.
1 o'clock at night, and no. 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh boy.
And so we have replaced it 3 times. And it is last night, the new one beeped also.
Is that electrical or battery power?
It's both. It has a backup battery, and it's electrical and a backup battery.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And the battery has been replaced, I presume, right?
Well, it seemed as though the battery came with the replacement, with the new one.
Hmm. Okay. It could be a problem with wiring, because, I mean, it's not. I don't think it's a defective smoke detector by per se, because you've changed that smoke detector 3 times. So
yeah,
it could be. I don't know if you put it on test settings. Sometimes some of them have like a daily test just to make sure it's working.
Oh yeah.
So it could be that as well. It's either that or a faulty wiring. I don't see anything else.
Hmm. The handyman said he checked the wiring, and because I asked him that, and he said it was fine. The green light is on. The red light flashes periodically on the unit.
Did you look at if it have a test, a daily, like a testing setting by which automatically it tests itself if it's working?
I don't know.
I would read the instruction manual, and if it does have that, maybe that's by default, factory default.
Like it's been left on that setting. That's why it keeps...
Could be. Could be. Hmm. Or I don't see anything else. Maybe he's not installing it correctly. I mean, you know. But I would look at that first. Just see if there's any features to it to kind of self-test itself.
Process of elimination, right?
That's correct.
See if that's an issue.
Test itself every day?
It depends. Some of them, it depends how the setting is, right? Either that, because it's definitely not the unit. You've changed the unit 3 times, okay?
Right.
It's definitely not the battery. The battery is brand new. So by process of elimination, it's wires or settings.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, Joan.
Or, wire setting or installation. But, you have to go through these processes, unfortunately.
Well,
or
this has been going on for days. I think it started on Tuesday.
You should call your landlord and ask him to have an electrician install it, maybe, just to kind of make sure that, you know, you have someone that know what they're doing and how to connect wiring adequately.
All right, Joan.
Thank you so much.
All right, good luck with it. I hope you can rectify that problem. That could be very annoying. It's 9:45. We're going to head outdoors.
This is the Home Improvement Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Right back to the phone here at 514-790-0800. Diane is out in Laval. Diane, thank you for your patience.
No problem.
We're sending a basket over.
Fantastic. The weather's so miserable, I could use it.
You have an issue with what, your banister and the railing?
Okay, the issue is this. Here's a grandma with Parkinson. I've been walking the streets of Chamedy for weeks. We cannot find anybody who will install it. The banister going up 6 steps and then I guess that little few feet across to the wall.
Okay.
There is nobody. I've left a message with Renovco. I don't know if you guys are going to call back, or I just don't know where else to turn. And my daughter's moving in, let's say, in a week or so, 2 weeks.
So I just want to get this right. You have a banister and a railing to change.
They've taken it off. The contractor guys that were there before, they took it off. They did the steps, the floors, and everything, and now they say just put it in with a few screws, but they don't want to put the old one back in when everything else is brand new. So we're looking for somebody to install the new one.
A brand new banister and railing.
Okay.
Right.
Well, usually these guys, I mean, just to kind of like
they don't
get you to zero in. It's stairs companies that do stairs.
Okay.
Usually they do these types of installations. Now, because you're kind of limiting it to the banisters and railings, probably that's why you're having a bit of a harder time getting them to come through. I will look into this for you.
Fantastic, I'll look into this for you. I'm tired of walking.
It's not a problem. And what is the linear footage of that?
Boy, well, there's six steps, and then I guess maybe 4 feet, not even, across.
Okay, so it's about 10 linear feet in total.
Maybe.
Okay. All right, so I'll look into that for you. But, I mean, I do feel your pain. It's stair guys are usually extremely busy. And
I mean, if they do come, they don't show up.
No, no. Unfortunately, when they're busy, they do triage. It's a bit of a, you know, a fancy word of, you know, putting the least exciting jobs at the bottom of the pile and the more exciting ones on top.
Yeah.
You know, if you're lucky now, it gets, you know, it kind of dies down a bit before Christmas. You might catch this guy that, you know, in his last thing. But I will look into that for you.
Diane, we have your number.
Fantastic.
All right. Good luck. Thank you for the phone call. Thank you for waiting.
Thanks.
All right.
Thanks for taking my call. And the basket, is it coming or what?
Well, it's in discussions right now.
Well, Ken is trying to get the budget from Bell Media.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Yeah, we have budget and staff issues. Let's go to Lisa in Verdun. Lisa, what's going on with the toilet?
Yeah, hi. I have an upflow toilet in my basement, and it has recently stopped being able to push waste out, but everything seems to work. Like, you hear the motor come on and there's a lot of water that comes in, but it just doesn't seem to have the force to push things out. I'm just wondering what to do.
How old is that toilet?
It's probably 10 years old.
Okay, now is it the one that have the motor in the back of it, or it's the one where it goes into a basin that is like in the ground and gets and kind of pumps it out from that?
The first one, the motor in the back.
Okay, and so it's not evacuating.
That's right. Yeah, but you hear the motor come on. It's almost like a flap doesn't open at the back of the toilet to let the water out of the bowl.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely a plumber's domain. You have to have a plumber that have that specialty, because not, believe it or not, not every plumber have installed these types of toilets before. And usually, like you said, maybe it's a flap issue or something. I can't really tell you like right off the bat. If it's working properly, it's the motor is working. I can't really tell you honestly. I just right off the bat like that. I can't. Does it make any weird noises or?
No, it seems to be working properly. Like, you hear the motor come on twice. It's just the evacuation, like a flap. Like I said, it seems like a flap is stuck,
because
otherwise it works well. Like, it seems to work.
But the noise that comes out, is it the same noise that used to come out when it used to work? Or it's a different type of a noise? Okay.
No, the same grinding noise.
All right. So, no, that's definitely a plumber's domain. I mean, those toilets, the reason I say call them plumber, don't change the toilet, because some of those toilets are very expensive. You know, they could run you up like $1,000, $1,500. So maybe it is worth it to get a plumber to check it out first.
Yeah.
Obviously, if you have to change many things at it, maybe it becomes worth it for you just to simply change the toilet. But it's just a question of, a flap or anything like that, then it shouldn't cost you much.
It's all right, Lisa.
1 hour's worth of work.
Thank you. Thanks for calling in. I think we have 2 minutes left in the show. So, Paolo, apologize for that. We're up against the clock, but we got 2 minutes. You want to talk to Walter quickly about your oil-based furnace?
Yes, good morning, guys.
Go ahead.
It's basically, this is my parents' building. They're in the Villeray area of Montreal. We got a letter from the city about a year ago urging us to change the furnace from oil-based to electrical system. Mm-hmm. And they offer a few, subsidies that Chauffe-Vert and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, Is there a certain time frame to do this work, or it's basically, you know, I know they want us to move away from oil, so, and they're also suggesting you go with an electric system, and is that the right system also? So is there a time frame, or is just at this point?
2023 is what most municipalities are talking about.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean that you are obliged, from what my understanding, because, I mean, and they keep on changing every now and then, is you don't have to change it right away, meaning you won't be allowed to change it to a new system if your system breaks down completely.
Okay.
And you would not be allowed to replace it.
Okay.
So you would have to start the planning process. But let's say your furnace is, I don't know, 2 years old.
Right.
And still in great working order. You don't necessarily need to change it right away.
Okay.
It's when it breaks down, that's when it becomes to be tricky. And then you're kind of rushing to do things. And, you know, it's a bigger
job. At that
point. That's correct.
We might be forced to change it, you're saying, at that point.
That's right. Now, the question of whether you want to do full electric or not, the problem with full electric is you're going to lose your buy energy rates if you go full electric.
Okay.
So having said that, it becomes a discussion with the technicians, with the ventilation guys you're going to bring in.
Okay.
And you're going to have to do the calculation, whether you do with, you know, because you can still go with propane type or gas type furnaces that I personally prefer because they heat up nicer and faster, and you get the double the dual energy rates from hydro, especially with the new like heat pumps right now that can run you down to -30, so you could really save a lot of money in that process. So I won't necessarily consider electric right off the bat.
Okay,
there you go, Paulo.
Just a quick, quick
10 seconds.
Right now, the furnace feeds it's a water based system. So it heats up the water and goes in the you know, water.
Good question.
Yeah. Can we keep those going forward?
Of course. Of course.
Okay.
Yeah. 100%.
Okay, great.
Thank you,
Paulo.
Thank you
very much, guys.
Bye now.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
2 minutes ago before 10 o'clock, where did the hour go?
I already pressed the off button.
So,
have yourself an amazing week.
You too, Walter. We'll talk again next Saturday morning at 9 on the Home Improvement Show. News is next. Latest from the newsroom. And then Lisa and the car show.